Welcome back to the Vancouver Island Music Fest podcast. I'm Dan McLennan. If I had to pick one musician from all of the incredible artists who remind me of that Music Fest experience, it would have to be Amos Garrett. It just seems like he's been on stage most of the years I remember. And so I was overjoyed to hear that Garrett would be back again this year to share his unique talents and that wonderfully dry wit with us once again. This year, he'll be playing in an amazing Guitar Heroes collaboration on the main stage with Albert Lee, David Wilcox, and James Burton. If you have any interest in the six string whatsoever, you don't want to miss this. I got Music Fest director Doug Cox to hook me up with Amos in February, and we had a great chat. Now, if you've heard the Music Fest podcast before, you'll know I try to mix up the conversation with the music, but Garrett's new album, the Amos Garrett Jazz Trio, wasn't to be released for several weeks after we had our chat, and I found I just couldn't sit on this interview and wait for the music. So here's Amos Garrett, without the music just yet. Amos, I don't know how many times you have come to the Vancouver Island Music Fest, but it's been a treat each time, and I have to say off the bat that it is a pleasure to be able to talk to you this morning. I thank you so much for giving me some of your time.
I'm happy to do so. It's one of my very favorite festivals, if not my favorite. I love the size of it and manageability and also the incredible level of talent that Doug Cox assembles every year. He's one of the best programmers not just folk festivals but all around music festivals in North America, I think. And I always enjoy being an audience member as well as a performer when I come to, there's always somebody great to hear.
Part of the magic of the Music Fest is also, though, that crossbreeding, the collaborative efforts that come together when Doug manages to put these interesting gatherings of artists on stage together. And you've been a big part of that as well. Can you describe the magic that happens there?
Yeah, well, he's as an example of that. I'm looking forward so much this year to the fact that Doug has assembled a kind of a guitar summit. That is, I'm flattered to be on the stage with these guys. Well, I know Albert. I've met James Burton, but I can't say I really know him. But I've hung out with Albert Lee a little bit and like that. And I grew up, you know, on the Toronto music scene with David Wilcox. So I haven't seen David in ages. I think I saw him, I went to a solo show that he did in a theater in downtown Calgary maybe 10 years ago. But this Guitar Summit thing is going to be awesome. I certainly hope it will be. You never know about these things. Sometimes you can put four of the most talented people in the world on stage together and nothing clicks. Who knows? And sometimes you put together some of the most unlikely combinations of people and something magical happens. I mean, I did a show at a workshop at, I guess it was the Edmonton Festival a couple of years ago, and there was this Mediterranean band fronted by a guy named Pavlo, who's a big star in the Mediterranean music circles, including Greek bands and other styles. His band was sort of a combination of two or three Greek musicians and a Macedonian musician and an Italian, and what a crazy band. And then the Edmonton Festival House Band was on stage with them, and we're basically a blues band more than anything. Well, we can play other stuff as well. I mean, we've backcountry artists and Zydeco people and stuff, but anyhow, it's kind of hard to swap songs with a Mediterranean band, or is it? And I just happen to have worked up an arrangement of Never on Sunday, which I figured would be like the Saints Go Marching In to Dixieland bands. They hate it, you know, because they've played it so many times. If you go to in Preservation Hall in New Orleans, there's a sign on the wall that says, request $2, the Saints $10. And so, but I said, Pavel, I said, do you guys, is Never on Sunday been just worn to death by the musicians that you work with and stuff? And he said, no. He said we like playing it. I mean, we enjoy it. It's almost like an anthem. And I said, well, I just have a little arrangement of it. myself that I worked up with a mandolin player in Calgary, so let's try it. And Holger Peterson said it was the funkiest version of Never Run Sunday he'd ever heard in his life. It was magic, you know, so there you go.
Now, you've worked with so many different artists in your career. What is it that makes Amos Garrett so versatile, so flexible?
I don't know. I think it's a lot of it's my background, which is was originally I came out of a jazz background because my family were jazz fanatics. My dad was a part-time jazz musician in the 1920s and 30s in New York and stuff. And then I developed a love of a lot of different kinds of music. So I started hearing acoustic folk music in my teens and acoustic blues. I mean, the old style Delta blues kind of stuff. And in my late teens, I was fortunate enough to be in Toronto when the folk scene in Toronto in those days was very, very vibrant. There's been a lot of great books written about it. One called After the Gold Rush. I was privileged to be able to see that generation of the last of the great Delta blues guys who were they're pretty much all gone now. Their children are still, singing the blues and stuff, but the original bunch like Skip James and Buka White and Josh White actually sort of led me in there. Brownie McGee and Sonny Terry, I used to go see those guys and hang out with them lots, and then I got into sort of period country music for quite a long time, and so anyhow, I have a varied background in the music that I grew to love and studied and learned over the first 30 years of my life. And I think that's what does it.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask some selfish questions, too, because I've been a fan for a long time. You mentioned Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee. What was it like hanging out with them? I've heard stories that they were, after a time, almost like an old couple and were bickering with each other fairly often, including on stage.
I never saw them bicker on stage ever. I can't imagine that. I saw them so many times. But it was true. I mean, it was legendary that they traveled in separate airplanes, separate trains, and stayed in separate hotels, and they just got really sick of each other for a certain point of time. But when they came into a club, it was like they were, Siamese twins joined at the hip, and they almost were, because Sonny being blind and Brownie having a bad leg. And they would sort of, Sonny was always saying, lead me, Brownie. And Brownie, I got you, Sonny. I got you covered. All right, brother. And it was all a serious brother, a show of brotherly love, at least. And they just played great,
Now, when I first came to Amos Garrett when you were playing with Better Days and Paul Butterfield. Yep. What was it like working with Butterfield?
Oh, he was the best that there was in his time. When he was at his peak, in the wake of the death of Little Walter, I'd say he was the best blues harmonica player living. I mean, there was just no one in his league. He was phenomenal. And consummate showman in a way too. And he would not leave. If we ever got a bad audience, or we've had a really dead audience and we hit the odd one occasionally, he would not leave the stage until he had them rabid, and he had a showpiece that we did it. We always saved for the end of the show because it worked. And either way, if the show was going great, it worked well. And if we had a dull audience, we would unleash this piece, and Paul would put on this harmonica extravaganza where the band would leave the stage, and he would just start pacing around the stage with no microphone, playing so quietly that in a 2,000 to 4,000 seat soft seater. hall, and then he would gradually, he would approach a microphone. He wouldn't be holding a, I mean, classically he played in the Electric Chicago style, where he played with a handheld mic that went in through a guitar amplifier, and he had that rig, of course, and that's what he used almost all night. But this showstopper that he did, and then he would gradually build it, and where he would walk up to a vocal microphone and play 2 or 3 feet back from the microphone and play a little bit there, and then he'd get kind of on top of that mic for a bit, and then he'd back off and he'd go pick up his little green bullet, which is his hand mic that ran through a guitar amplifier, and the band would always have the lighting guys pretty much take all the lights down on stage except for a spot on Paul, and we would file back in sort of secretly and, strap our instruments on or sit down at our keyboards, drums, whatever. And all of a sudden the band would just explode into this great shuffle that Paul had been playing for about 10 minutes. And by the time that was over, the audience was just shredded. And that was it. And then they'd be screaming for encores, and Paul would turn around, look at the audience and say, piss off and leave the stage. You've been shitty all night, and now you want us. Now you want us to do an encore. And so he wouldn't do that. I mean, if the audience had been with us all night, he'd do encores forever. He was really something to work with. I've never worked with Sonny and Terry, but I've attended a zillion shows and drank a fair number of bottles of beer with those two guys, just hanging out in the dressing rooms and stuff. Mostly at the Riverboat in Yorkville Avenue in Toronto in the 60s.
Are there other personalities that really stand out in terms of the people you have played with, the people you've seen, the people that influenced you?
Well, I wouldn't say they so much influenced me, but peers that really impressed me, that I really loved working with, would be, I'd have to say off the top of my head, Doug Somm, Jeff Muldaur, with whom I've had a musical relationship on and off for 35 years or so, probably the greatest white blues singer in history. At least Richard Thompson says there are only three good white blues singers in this world, and Jeff Muldaur is two of them. And I kind of like that. Those two, Emmylou Harris, a lot, Maria Muldaur, of course. Elvin Bishop, I did one tour with Elvin. I don't think I had more fun in my life than that. On that tour, that was so much fun. And to talk of a consummate showman, that guy is really something.
What made that tour so much fun?
The band itself and Elvin. Elvin's very smart and he's very funny. He puts on this bibbed overall, straw hat, Oklahoma hick kind of act. He's got 2 degrees from the University of Chicago. And they're serious degrees. Like one of them's in economics, and the other is, I think, political science. And the guy's very bright and very funny. And the band was one of the most collection of some of the funniest people I'd ever been on the road with. It was just one big laugh fest for the entire tour. And I think I lost weight from laughing on that tour.
Now
the music was great.
Now you have the Amos Garrett Jazz Trio. What can you tell me about this grouping?
Well, the trio is myself on electric guitar, another Canadian fingerstyle guitar player named Keith Smith, who's just really a remarkable guitar player, very different style from mine. But the two of us have this kind of a compatibility that it's uncanny, and just the way we play together, you'll have to hear it. Compatibility is we could almost make that the album title. We are just in the throes of wrapping up we have actually finished all the music stuff for our forthcoming first album. And our regular bass player, Greg Carroll, will not be able to make the tour, but we have used a great, one of the best bass players in Canada, a man named John Hyde, who's a neighbor of yours. And John lives in somewhere in the Comox Valley, just outside of town. And John was probably the most sought after string bass player in Alberta or in the West for a long time. John and a guy named Mike Lant, who was Katie Lang's bass player for a long time, and a bunch of other stuff. But anyhow, John, we're going to be coming down and rehearsing for 2 or 3 days, staying at John's house, and we did that like 3 years ago, and it came off really well. In fact, the new album is all live performances, no overdubbing, and 3 of the performances are from the Vancouver Island Music Festival, including a guest vocal as well by Roberta Donné, who is one of Dan Hicks' lickettes from the new Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks. And she's a tremendous singer. And very last minute, our main concert was on the Woodland stage. And we'd done a workshop that included Dan Hicks and his band. And Roberta just flipped when she heard our trio. And she just said, I would just die to sing something with you guys. I know your concert starts pretty soon after this workshop's over. And I just, off the top of my head, I just said, do you know Skylark? Because we do that. It's a great Hoagie Carmichael ballad. And she says, I sort of know the song. I've never sung it. It's a very difficult song to sing. She says, but I think I can take a stab at it. And she had a laptop. And she said, I'm going to go hook up to Skype or something and get a chart and a set of lyrics for it, and I'll see you at the Woodland stage. And she very bravely got up and did a phenomenal job singing Skylark. So we included that on the recording like that there. And the trios, the best thing you could do would probably be go to my website and read a description of what we are and what we do, and keep an eye out for our album. Our album will be out in about 2 months. It should be on the shelves.
Now, I remember you and Dan Hicks and the Hot Licks. I believe that was on the Grierson stage. That would have been, 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
That was quite a combination. Now, on your website, the Amos Garrett Jazz Trio has the motto of bringing the blues back to jazz. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, let me see. It's sort of a motto. And it's something that a lot of the material that we do is a sub-form of bebop that was created in the 1950s and continued to be played through the 60s, referred to as jazz blues. And it's basically 12-bar to 32-bar types of blues, but as played by the way modern jazz players would play it, with a little bit more elaborate chord structure. Mostly, I mean, all the basic, 12-bar... three-chord blues changes, but then some other types of passing chords and connecting chords and stuff that make the blues a little more interesting and more fun for a soloist to play around. And I think that one of my partners, Keith Smith, the other guitar player I was referring to, said it best, and I quoted him actually on the website when he said, in our search for something profound, we so often just settle for something more complicated. And in the process, we drive much of our audience away. Since the blues, as the antecedent of and a driving force in jazz, seems to have largely disappeared from it. That's not to say that current jazz is incomplete without it. I just miss the feel and the blood and guts that was there when the music was more visceral and perhaps a bit less intellectual. And I couldn't have said it better.
So can you take us back to that first moment, that first meeting of young Amos Garrett and his first guitar?
Actually, my first guitar appeared under a Christmas tree. And it was a $40 German flat top. And I played it so much that it completely disintegrated within about 6 months. And I had to get something a little sturdier. But before that, I used to borrow a guitar from a high school chum who owned a pretty nice little electric guitar, and he never played it. But I'd have to, I could borrow it for like 3 or 4 days in a row, but then he'd want it back because he was afraid I'd wind up keeping it forever or something like that. So that got inconvenient, I would bring it home, and I'd disappear in the bedroom and play it for like 12 hours nonstop. So the parents said, I think I was sort of struggling with the piano and the trombone as my two first instruments, and that neither of which really suited me, and for various reasons. And the guitar and I just seemed to mate properly, and my mother and father, who were both very musical people, saw that. So they saw to it that I had a guitar under the Christmas tree the next year.
And the rest is history. You've been through a lot of guitars, I assume.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I know guitar players that have, you know, rooms full of, houses full of guitar, apartments full of guitars. I met a collector in Japan the last time I was over there who had 600 guitars in his house. Amazing. But I don't think I've ever owned more than five or six at a time. And usually I play the best one of the bunch, and the other are just sort of trade bait. You know, I mean, because every so often something will come along and some new guitar will get invented or something, and I have to have it. That's all there is to it. And by having four or five good collectible guitars, you know, in the back room, I can usually trot something out and just make a trade for it. So I did that quite recently, actually. I'm playing a new thin hollow body Epiphone model, and I traded a Gretsch Synchromatic full hollow body, kind of like a big old style jazz box, for it. And that and $26 bought me my new Epiphone. So there you go.
What else is in the collection?
A cheap 12 string from Quebec. It's a really beautiful guitar. A one-of-a-kind Michael Haydn. Michael Haydn's probably Canada's most respected custom hand guitar luthier, you know, guitar builder. He's in Creston these days, but he worked out of Calgary for a long time. And I bought a little 12-fret parlor guitar. It's the only one he ever made of that style. That's my six-string acoustic. I've got my old red Telecaster, which I would never sell. What else do I have? That's it.
You're on the road periodically with the jazz trio. You're bringing them to the or two thirds of the jazz trio to the Vancouver Island Music Fest. You're putting the finishing touches on your first live album with the trio. How busy is Amos Garrett these days?
Busy enough. I've got a very busy summer. I'm playing festivals just about every weekend. I'm gigging one or two concerts a month from now till the summer season starts. And at the end of the summer season, I'm going to Alaska to teach in a music camp for a week. I'm very excited about that.
So you haven't got tired of the road. You've certainly spent enough time there.
I'm not out there that much. I don't really tour. It's more like I spoke with, you know, High River, Alberta as the hub of the wheel, and then I spoke out from High River and go right back there. Like next week, I'm doing a concert in Red Deer, Alberta, and then I'm back here for 29 days off. That's about how I like it. You know, work one day, take 29 off.
That's a pretty good proportion.
Yeah. In June, I actually think I'm doing three concerts and 27 days off. There you go. That's the way to do it. But in the summer, it's like, you know, three-day festivals, home for 3 days, travel date, festival for 3 days, home for 3 days, or travel date, home for 1 day, 2 days, travel date, next festival. You know, that's what you do for 8 weeks. If you can fill them up.
Doug tells me, get Amos talking about his fishing.
Let me see. Well, I'm very excited about this Alaskan camp because I've never fished Alaska, and actually I've never been there except to touch down and refuel on a long flight to Osaka in 1970. So I'm looking for that. And I fish as many days as I possibly can. I have a beautiful trout stream running right past my house in High River, which is convenient, and there are trout streams and lakes scattered all over southern Alberta. It's a very famous area to fish, which is neat. But I love going other places. I mean, I've fished from Japan to Labrador to Scotland to France, Switzerland, the USA, of course, and Western Canada on the Front Range is my home turf.
You're still tying flies and even offering them with album sales?
Not offering them with album sales anymore. I got alerted to a liability problem that could arise if someone ever, someone's child ate one of my dry flies or something like that, or their cat, And so I said, you better not do that. Better not put sharp objects in with your music product, Amos. This is not smart.
But you're still tying them. What's your most productive fly at the moment?
A water beetle imitation called a Jennings Ultimate Boatman.
I hope I haven't taken too much of your time, Amos. It has been a pleasure. And continue to enjoy your eagles, your weather, your early spring, and your fishing. And I look forward to seeing you this summer at the Music Fest yet again.
Okay, Dan. Well, thank you very much. We'll see you this summer.
The incomparable Amos Garrett from his home in High River, Alberta. Watch for the release of his new album, the Amos Garrett Jazz Trio. I'm hoping that'll be my chance to talk with him again. I'm Dan McLennan. Thanks for listening. And thanks yet again to Helen Austin and Todd Butler for the Ultimate Music Fest theme song.
We can sit together and watch the show. Oh, in any weather, we'll watch the show here at Vancouver Island Music Fest. Here at Vancouver Island Music Fest. Here at Vancouver Island Music Fest.